sober. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi there.
And welcome to series two of Meet at the Hotel Bar. After being tangled up in tabloid dramas, hitting the podcast charts, and unearthing some of the best kept touring stories you will ever hear, we are back again, bigger and better. Who knew that was even possible?
If you are new here, we are JC, Freddie and Huss from the band Flaws, a three-piece indie pop band from London via Huddersfield. Since we started touring and travelling the globe, we realised that there are so many funny things that happen on and off stage, and so many stories that never get shared with the rest of the world. They just stay in the dressing rooms and tour buses of the bands and artists you love.
Until now. In this podcast, we're lifting the lid on life on the road. And where better to meet up and tell those touring tales than a place every touring musician knows well, the trusty hotel bar.
You said crusty?
Crusty, yeah. A lot of them are, especially the Halo Bar.
Oh, take that back. Okay. We love the Halo Bar.
In today's episode, we met up with Shea from Gorillaz in Islington's finest Hilton Hotel Bar. Everybody loves a Hilton. Gorillaz, the brainchild of Damon Albarn and Jamie Hewlett, was originally a virtual band with fictional characters until they began touring as a real band with real members. They have toured and headlined festivals all over the world, including Coachella and the mighty Glastonbury. Having sold over 33 million records worldwide, they have some of the most iconic bass lines out there, of which Shea, the bassist, has the pleasure of playing every night.
Shea was a real gent, wise beyond his years and full of insights, as you'll soon hear.
Stay tuned to hear stories of what it feels like to accidentally leave your bass on mute whilst playing Coachella's main stage, what it's like having Damon Albarn as a best mate and taking on sobriety and winning. A round of sparkling water, some with and some without a slice of lemon, were on the table ready for this one.
This is Shea from Gorillaz coming up on Meet at the Hotel Bar. Meet at
the Hotel Bar. Cool, I think we're rolling. So, welcome, Shea. Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure. Nice one, guys.
We're currently... What's the name of the place we're in? Hilton?
The Hilton?
Hilton? Yeah, we're in Hilton in Angel. Hilton. Currently kind of baking in a
it's
sort
hot,
of
isn't it?
Glass.
Yeah. Someone's
glass
making
house.
A coffee in the hotel bar over there.
I nice stupidly put noise. A vest on underneath my t-shirt. So.
And a leather jacket.
Yeah.
Mate.
I'm paying for it.
That's a lot.
See, this is where we do miss out on the visual aspect.
Yeah, well, we can let them paint whatever picture they like.
We'll take a selfie at the end.
I just turned up in pants.
Yeah. we'll get straight into it. So you have literally just got back from playing the mighty Coachella.
Yes.
With Gorillaz. You were like, was it like the second headliners? Was it like
we were main support? So it's us and then Bad Bunny on main stage.
Yeah. So sick. How was that?
it was great, and it was a mixed bag.
Oh, really?
Let me say that. So the first weekend was terrible.
Oh, why?
Like, no offense, but I've never experienced such a dry crowd in such a large quantity. Like, and it wasn't just us. It was that was the vibe for the whole weekend. And in general, weekend one, it's so so guest list. It's so influencer.
Everyone's
it's so
cool, aren't they?
Yeah, it's not. And it's a really expensive ticket anyway, so it kind of limits or it forces a certain kind of person to go.
Yeah.
Like, even when Burna Boy went on before us and he was killing and, like, it wasn't really, no one was really vibing. It was just like, what's going on here? So that was really hard because it was like almost 100,000 people or something. And it was really, really hard work, like not making any noise or clap. It was just like, and we did great objectively, I think.
Yeah.
But I think thankfully what we did was we didn't capitulate. We did our thing. And also I think it's always good to they don't owe us anything either. So like I don't like going in sort of expecting people to love it. Yeah. It's actually quite good sometimes to earn it, like to go out and mm-hmm. see what you're like. Because I guess the you really test your mettle or find out what kind of band you are when things aren't going well.
Yeah.
And it wasn't ideal, but we still smashed it, I think. Like, it wasn't our crowd, you know what I mean? But we did our best. And then, but then the second weekend was really good. I don't know what it is, but apparently the second weekend is more vibey, like people cut loose a bit more. And yeah, even though it was slightly slower to start, but we really got them going by the end. And but in general, I had a great time. The weather was great.
Yeah.
It's a really clean festival.
Oh, okay.
Like, they literally put grass, like they roll turf out everywhere and like water it. It's like there's grass.
Because it is literally in the middle of the desert.
It's in the middle of the desert, yeah. And it's like 30 something degrees. Like, and it was like 26 at night. So it was like, no joke, it was serious heat. I feel for the people. Maybe that's also why, because they've been stood out in
feel
the sun
for the
all day.
Gardeners especially.
Yeah, exactly.
Keeping that grass alive.
But when we're sound checking in the morning, you can see the like big trucks of like water just like spraying the whole like field. Yeah, no, it's quite a lot, quite an undertaking. It's, you can see they spend a lot of money on it. They do a good job. Backstage was great. Catering was great. But no, I feel really grateful to have done it.
Sick. Yeah. And what do people do? Like, so obviously it's over two weekends. It's the same lineup. What do you do in that week?
What we did, we went to LA.
I was going to say, surely everyone just goes to LA and then it's just like one big... I just imagine it to be one big party of everyone just being there.
Yeah, I think there's lots of
in
events.
Town,
there's
lots of sessions,
events,
right?
Lots of sessions, lots of studio link-ups. I've actually got family there, so I hung out with my family, hooked up some friends. But we also did Jimmy Kimmel live.
Oh, yeah, no, I saw that. Sick.
With song the Gorillaz have with Beck, and we performed that in the middle. So it was a mixture of a couple of days off, but also a bit of work. And then, yeah, back to Palm Springs on the Thursday.
Sick. Yeah, so I know you mentioned interesting being there. What would you say your favourite city is to tour? What's your favorite place?
Anywhere in South America.
Okay.
I have a soft spot for South America because I did my sixth form in Ecuador, so I speak Spanish and like just like Latin American culture means a lot. There's also a link with like Afro-Cuban music. Like there's a lot of rhythmic similarities with sort of African and West African as well, which kind of resonates with me. But the response that we've had in South America kind of beats like anybody out the water. It kind of, no matter where you play, it kind of feels like a Champions League final or something. It's like, it's literally people going like, ole, 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 between songs. It's carnage.
Between songs.
Yeah, it's absolute carnage. And, you know, we have to have like extra security at hotels, like barriers and stuff, because people just find out where you stay and just like pack it out.
Oh, wow.
Out front. Yeah, no, it's you feel so much love, but it's not like, it's not intense in a bad way. It's intense in a pure love. It's a very warm, passionate continent, and very, very musical, lots of interest in music, and just art in general. It's a super arty continent, so it feels like a bit of a second home. Really?
Oh, cool. Yeah. We need to head out there. I feel like everyone's answer is like South America or Mexico. Is
hit
like,
Mexico and just go
to,
down.
I mean, Mexico is, I mean, the food there is incredible. Yeah. I think whenever we go to LA, we basically live off Mexican.
So
I think for that alone, we should get there.
Yeah, Mexico is actually a really great example of just all the arts are just so well represented there. Even like food as well, like... crazy great food, great vibes.
Yeah, is there anywhere that you've yet to tour that's like on a, do you have a list?
Hits for sure, like I've never done like Southeast Asia, I haven't done like Thailand, like I haven't done India. I'd love to do places like that. I've done, in terms of Asia, I've done Japan, Australasia, Japan, South Korea, and like Australia, those sort of parts, but not New Zealand yet as well. So there's a gig in like New Zealand or somewhere like that, hit me up.
Yeah. we got booked for a gig in India once, didn't we?
Mate.
But it was like a touring gig. It was like a festival that like moved, and it started in like one place and it got moved to like the next one and then it moved
to the
next.
So you would have been on like the whole like circus.
Yeah, we would have moved with the festival. Exactly, like a circus. But
exactly.
It's sadly, like, that was affected COVID. By COVID. Classic, yeah.
Mate, everything, classic. 2020. You guys, man. That was, you were just saying.
An especially bad year, I think, for us. For our plans,
it was
at least.
It literally when everything was kicking off, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It seems like it, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you felt like that has, obviously it rocked you, but have you sort of gained a little bit of grit or something from it? Like, what have been the benefits of that happening?
We already had a bit of grit. We already...
We got double grit. I mean, it inspired the album, so there's definitely a benefit in that sense. And we still managed to be creative through the through the lockdown. We made an EP and definitely developed our production skills and recording abilities. So lots of benefits there. But I think the live side of things really did get affected for us. Yeah. But we're building it back up. We've just been out on tour with Tom Grennan, which was great.
Yeah, amazing.
Some cool things coming up this summer. So yeah, just got to rebuild it, I guess, and get that momentum back.
It's all about the momentum.
It is.
All about the momentum.
Okay, so the beauty of live gigs is that not everything always goes according to plan.
Mm.
What's the worst thing to happen to you guys on stage?
It's funny, things go wrong all the time.
Yeah.
Even at like sort of Gorillaz level, sort of like, because there's a lot of technical things that need to be working at 100%.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, we don't use much backing track, but we have to do everything to click because of the visuals.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe something happens and we have to take a song in a certain direction and it's out of sync with the visuals. Like, those things happen all the time. I mean, I personally have had like issues with power, and like my pedals just sort of cut out all the time. I actually had it the first note of the first gig at Coachella, like this huge, like this big song called M1A1. My mute pedal was on.
Like
the first note, it just wasn't there. It was so embarrassing.
Could you blame the roadie for that, or was that solely on you?
I was trying to, but I was just like, I thought back, was like, actually, I like it muted initially, so I turn it off myself, and I just didn't. I don't know why, but that's painful. But going back to like, because I started playing shows, solo gigs, just like acoustic in pubs, and doing, you know, really small tours with like indie singer-songwriters and stuff, and we had all sorts, like vans breaking down, driver being pulled over, and like he had his license revoked while on tour.
Oh, really?
Yeah, off the tour bus. Yeah, it was literally a 4x4. We just like I can't remember whether he borrowed it or whether it was his, but we were just in a car for this tour because we were on them levels, like,
yeah.
And he, like, it was bad. Like, he was caning at like 100 miles an hour on a motorway for some, I can't remember, we had to get back. It was one of those where like couldn't afford to stay at a hotel or something, so we were driving back like every night on this tour to like stay at home, and then we'll go back out. And for some reason, this guy was cooking so fast, like to the point where like we saw these blues and twos, like these lights behind us, police. And they were so far back, we didn't even think that it was for us because we were going that fast. And eventually they pulled up beside and was like, pull over. It was, I can't remember what we did. Like, we had to like pull up somewhere, like a service station, and get someone else to like take over. But it was...
And you say he lost his license there and on the spot.
Immediately, bruv. Like, he didn't start driving until relatively recently. Like, it was a serious... And I think he probably already had a couple issues with his license. But... You know, those things happen and you just sort of crack on and sort of try and make it work somehow.
Shit, I just thought of a really funny story. I used to know this guy and he passed his test when he was 17.
Right.
His driving test. And he got a car from his mum. His mum had got him his car, but they hadn't sorted out the insurance.
Right.
Like, the insurance started on like the Monday and it was like the Saturday or the Friday.
Okay.
He went to his mates for the weekend and drove the car.
Right.
So he went to his mate's house and he was going to just stay over. And for whatever reason, he got bullied into like driving everyone home.
No.
And of course he'd had like a few beers.
No.
And it wasn't like wasted. I think he just had like a few beers and drove home, like going really slowly. He got pulled over by the police and he'd had his license for like 24 hours or something.
And immediately it went?
Yeah, lost his license because he was driving over the limit. He was driving without insurance. Maybe he was speeding. Maybe there was something else.
It was like
everything that could have gone wrong.
Yeah.
Basically,
I think the roads are safer without him on them. Yeah.
That sounds about right.
He got like a 2-year ban. Wow. So he couldn't. And also he got a 2-year ban and he had to retake his test.
Oh my days. That fills me with dread because literally I've just come from a driving lesson. I've got two more. Shit, I don't drive yet. I'm literally, my test is next week.
Yeah, well, don't be giving anyone lifts, mate, home, all right?
No one's getting a lift for at least a year or two. No one.
That's funny. Shout out Craig if you're listening.
Yeah.
So taking it back to gigs, is there a most treasured memory you have or a favorite gig or a career highlight that you'd like to share?
I mean, there are I'm actually in a really lucky position where, like, I've been doing this. It's the only job I've ever had. So I've been doing this since I was 18. I'm 35 in like a week. So it's quite a little while of quite a spectrum of things. Like I said, like from starting out literally playing to three people, if that, or a pub where no one knows, like open mic nights and stuff, to, you know, arenas and headline festivals. It's been, I think each bump up has been great. Like the first solo show I booked through like MySpace at a place called the Slaughtered Lamb, here in London.
Classic.
Yeah, like way back, it's like 2007 or something like that. Yeah, 06, 07. Playing those gigs and like having people I didn't know come to those shows, like that was really quite special. Being so nervous, sweating on the tube with my acoustic guitar and overdressed like today. But having my friends show up as well to give me some support, that was cool. And then say when I started doing more session stuff and watching things go from, like I used to play with Paloma Faith when before she was signed and just playing London, like Soho and East London gigs. When we went from doing those to like rehearsing in proper rehearsal spaces and like having generic in-ears for the first time, I was like, oh snap, this is like, we've made another step up. And then she sold out like Hammersmith and it's like, oh my days, this is another, a whole other level. But thankfully each kind of led to the next quite organically. And then, you know, we're starting to work with someone like Damon Albarn. There's kind of countless amazing memories. One in particular, when I first met him in 2012, we did Africa Express, which is a project he does where he gets like Western musicians and African musicians, puts them all together either on a trip, or what we did in 2012 was charter a train and went around the UK playing shows with, I think there was about 85 musicians.
Oh, wow.
on this train. Yeah, it was wild. But it was like everybody from like Temper Trap were on there, Rizzle Kicks were on there, Ray Morris, to like John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin was chilling on there.
So are you playing on the train, sorry, or are you just getting around?
That's how we got around. Okay. But we had like a jam cart. There were instruments on this train. So you could like rehearse on there. There was like drink and food and massage tent. It's like, it was quite cool. And then we just get to somewhere, take over a hotel. They'd have a rehearsal space ready with like every room booked out. So every day the gig changed. So it's like one artist wants to play a song, but they want to play it with a Congolese drum line and, you know, a mandolin player and, I don't know, Tony Allen on drums or something. Then they'd rehearse that day and we perform it that night. It was like 4-hour shows every day. But the crazy mix of people was amazing. And I had just finished touring my solo stuff at this time. I had a record deal. But I'd done like 3 months back to back of just playing gigs solo and I couldn't really sing. So I was like, I'm going to do this, but I'm just going to play and jam with as many people as I can and participate. And I ended up playing quite a lot with a lot of people. And Damon enjoyed the way I played. So on the last night, he's like, Sir Paul McCartney's coming. Do you want to come play with us? I'm like, yeah.
I think I'm busy.
I think, yeah. Exactly. You know what? I'm going to get off on that stop.
Yeah, I've seen the time.
Like, I ended up playing with, it was like Damon Albarn, Sir Paul McCartney, Tony Allen on drums, this amazing Malian Ngoni player called Baseko Kiate, John Paul Jones on mandolin.
Wow.
Can't remember who was on bass. I was on electric guitar. It was just so mad. And that was like 2012. And working with Damon, it's sort of been mad things like that all the time, from like recently playing with like Thundercat and Beck, which is, who's a legend that I love. Robert Smith, who was actually one of the, on the, in my head, the Mount Rushmore of British music for me. He's such a legend in my eyes. Yeah, just like lots of really, really cool things like that. Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
So it sounds like you play a few instruments. So you went from guitar to bass. Are they the two main?
Yeah, they're the two main ones. Okay, cool. I tend to write on piano these days quite a lot because it's my favorite instrument, but I didn't have a great teacher when I was a kid. So it kind of killed.
What, piano lessons?
Yeah, they killed the best years, man. Beatrice. Still really remember her.
Mine was Linda, but again, Linda will probably listen to this, so I'm editing this out.
I think Beatrice is in Holland. I'm not sure what she's saying, but my parents gave us all lessons when we were kids, and it fell by the wayside for me. But I'm really annoyed because that's probably one of my favourite instruments. But of late, I've been playing it a lot more.
Yeah.
Not great, but I can at least play a bit enough to write. And it just forces you to write differently when you. You know, not on your like native instrument, as it were. Yeah, but guitars mainly and vocals are my main ones. Actually, my first instrument was flute, but I haven't played in so long now. I haven't played since like I was 17 properly or something like that. So
you played for your school? You were in like concert band?
Yeah. Bromley Youth Concert Band. Big up.
I used to play the trombone.
Oh yeah, sweet.
Part of the concert band Massive. And the big band Massive.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing about the flutes also, we were sat opposite the clarinets in concert band. There was just something about clarinet players that there's the arrogance. Like the first clarinet who had like the first violin energy, I'm like, look, it's not as cool. So still got beef.
Just not a saxophone, you know. No one will ever be the saxophone.
No. But yeah, like that's... Guitars are my main inspo, I'd say. Yeah.
Okay, so going back to day one and your first ever tour, was that a solo tour by the sounds of it, or were you... Was your first thing a session tour?
It was a session tour. But it was with a chap called Jeremy Walmsley. Big up to J-Wo. Who's also, he's now, him and his wife are a band called Summer Camp now, and both amazing composers and musicians and artists in general. But yeah, he was actually a friend of my brother Benga Delican, big up, who's bass player in Metronomy. But at this time, I was sleeping on my brother's couch on my gap year. I was meant to be going to uni, but I'm still on my gap year. And he was playing with this guy. He was playing bass in this guy's band. And I wasn't really doing anything. And for whatever reason, he couldn't do a certain tour. And I was just there. And he's like, look, have a go. Maybe you can replace me. And, you know, cover me for this tour. I sort of learned the album. I went and auditioned. And it went pretty well. That ended up being quite a regular thing for a little while. And it worked out well. And that was my first foray into doing that sort of thing. But it was really, like I said, it was... really small, like low key, very like, I can't remember what I made, maybe like 50 quid a week, something like that. I was like, got paid in beer and PDs maybe. But that was exciting. I think Lincoln like Town Hall was like the first show, and there were like 8 people. It was quite far to go, and I was like full of beans. Like, I think
the best show you've ever played,
mate. I smashed it up. I turned it up to about 11. Yeah. I went in and was just like, yeah, it was really, really.
I love those though. I was always told that, like, you know, you never know who those 11 people are. Mm. You don't know. Like, I think it was Tom O'Dell that played a show. And there was 5 people in the audience, but one of those people was Lily Allen.
Right. Amazing.
Just randomly was there to see, I don't know, was there for, to go for a drink or whatever, and went through, and ended up passing on to her management or her label, and he ended up getting a record deal after that one show. And if he'd have just, you know, there's only 5 people here, and put on like a shit show, then, you know, yeah, you just never know what is around the corner.
Like. I agree. Like, those things have happened a lot. Where just someone, you do well in whatever context, and it could also just be from being a dope person. Like, somebody will keep you in mind, and they're like, oh, I actually liked that person's vibe, I liked the way they were, I liked the way that they mind their P's and Q's, said thank you, looked you in the eye, you know, all this stuff.
Totally, yeah.
Those things, more than even, I'd say almost as much or more than your show, they're the things that people talk about. It's just like, I guess the music was good, but they were a nightmare. It's like, you don't want that to be the...
Yeah, I think you get to a point as a musician where you're accomplished enough to get by on most pop gigs.
Yeah.
And then a big part of it is, are you nice to be around for 12 hours a day?
Exactly.
Are you fun? Are you kind? Or whatever else.
Are you on time?
Because because 80% of it is not playing.
Yeah.
Like, you're only on stage for, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever. The rest of it, you're eating together, traveling together, you know, whatever, doing promo, like up early in the morning, trying not to be ratty, you know,
exactly.
Like them, like promo tours, man, like radio promo tours, like brutal. But I'm grateful for those gigs to five people, whatever, because they ultimately, like I said, with the sort of, you can get just as the same response from a crowd with 80,000 people, like we did the first weekend at Coachella. It's like, who are you when the gig's not what you think it is? Do you still put on a good show? Because if you do, then I think that shows a bit of character. Mm-hmm. If you don't, it's like, so you're only doing it to get people to say, oh, you were great. Like, why are you doing it? It makes you really answer those questions.
I think also with social media, like, even if the crowd aren't vibing it, a group of people are going to see it.
Yeah. And I wonder what percentage.
And that's what people said. Like, they were like, people who messaged me saying, oh man, that crowd were a bit dry, but you guys looked amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys did well. I feel like I'm really like shitting on Coachella. It was great fun. Book us again. But like, but it's really clear. Like, everybody says, like, yikes, that crowd. It's like, but thankfully, none of us like were like gave it like the gave him the finger and like we're like, what are you guys doing? It's no, we're gonna do what we do. If you want to have a good time, you're welcome to do that, but that shouldn't change who we are. Go on time, do what you say you're gonna do, and then leave.
No, that's cool. Do you remember what was your first tour that you did with Gorillaz?
First tour with Gorillaz,
playing those iconic bass lines.
Yeah, there's a lot of them actually. It's a lot. It would have been 2000. We started 2016, but actually, really, I started playing with Damon 2013.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Met him 2012. We did Africa Express thing 2012. Then 2013, made a record in Mali with Africa Express project, and then started working on his solo first solo album called Everyday Robots. We went out and toured that for a couple of years, and within that show, we started playing Gorillaz songs. Like, we played his solo stuff, but then because it's his solo project, he can kind of touch on all of his projects. So we were playing Damon solo stuff, we were playing Good, the Bad, the Queen songs, Gorillaz songs, and Blur songs, and even like we played like Rocket Juice to the Moon, that project he did with like Flea, I think Tony Allen, like we touched on everything he had. So started playing those things from then. But it was very different when, after doing that, he asked us to be involved in the Gorillaz band. It's like, oh, snap. So that was the Humans album tour, which started in, late 2016, early 2017, which was amazing. It's my first foray into that world. And actually, the show's grown, not necessarily in terms of personnel. Actually, we do have one more percussionist involved now. But I think sort of it's found its feet and it's developed and it's just changed, and it's quite different to how things started when I was there. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of the same boys who in fact, I was the new boy coming in because everyone else had played in the band before.
Right.
But it feels like family now.
Sick.
Yeah.
And it's, who is it for? It's like Petra and Angel as well. BB's.
Petra and Angel. So they weren't there when I got there. Angel had done BB's with us, with Damon's solo thing.
Oh, cool.
From then, I think, did Petra do that as well? And then we brought them back and auditioned a few more people, and then that's become, Angel's become like, she leads the vocal section.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we just did the with the Tom Grennan tour.
Yeah.
And I remember like the last night, I was like, oh, what are you doing next? Which was like, oh, I'm flying to Vegas tomorrow.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, cool, sick. It's like, oh, yeah, we're doing Coachella with Gorillaz. I was like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
That's like, you've not mentioned that all tour.
And do you know what's funny? Sick. Angel's dad is my driving instructor. So big up Neville Silvera.
That's crazy. Full circle.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot. He's taught like a bunch of musicians to drive.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I think a lot of them independently. It's not like Angel's like his fixer, like feeds him musicians.
Yes.
I think a lot of people just found him. Yeah. Find his feet.
Is he giving you a good, like, good deal? Because it's not cheap.
He gave me a bit of a deal, but it's still peak because it's like a lot of hours you got to do. I'm in the 30s probably hours.
Wow.
Well, that's about right.
And you got to learn in London as well.
Yeah, so one of the reasons why I'm from Bromley in southeast London. So like I'm going to do my test down there. I'm learning down there.
Okay, yeah.
So even though I live East London now, it's like, I'm not messing with that.
Well, that's the thing.
No. I value my sort of life.
Yeah. I was really fortunate. My uncle was a driving instructor.
Mate.
So he, my dad actually forced him to charge me. He was going to do it. He was like, I was going to do it for free. Right, and my dad was like, no, you need to at least pay for his petrol. And I was like, Dad, what are you doing, man?
It's like, mate, sort of, like, literally, come on, Dad. What's going on?
Did me dirty. But no, I was very fortunate. But again, there's a huge difference between driving in Huddersfield and doing driving lessons and driving tests in London.
Do either of you drive like the tour van?
No. Hust actually drives a van, but he just drives like a little mini caddy. Okay. I've just noticed, right, we all three of us got... sparkling water at the start. You guys have got a lemon. I don't have a lemon.
Mate, you've got
enough.
I'm an ice and sliced man. You can't. I wouldn't have even sipped that empty glass.
At both of your glasses, thinking that looks refreshing. Why does that look so much more refreshing than mine?
I was chatting to a friend actually over the weekend who lives he lives a healthy life. He doesn't really drink alcohol. He eats pretty well. And he went to the dentist, and the dentist asked him if he drinks fizzy water. Right. And the dentist said, you need to cut it out it down because it's, whatever, it's damaging the enamel or whatever else.
Wow, it's so...
Is that
a thing? And so now he already lives like a really healthy lifestyle, and now he's having to limit himself to one a week.
Oh my God.
He's like, what's life worth living
can't
for?
Can't win.
I was going to say...
I'm too healthy, actually.
And it was like, we've got to watch this stuff. This
a
is
a serious
actually,
issue.
Yeah, apparently so.
Mate.
That's the takeaway. Start limiting it.
No, I mean, I live by my SodaStream at home.
Same.
Me too.
I also don't drink anymore. So it's my jam. Like, fizzy water is like one of my last bastions of things I can do. So if they take that away from me, I don't know what I'll be able to do.
Yeah, so coincidentally, I heard you on One for the Road, a podcast about stopping drinking.
Yeah.
And that was actually... bizarrely, like literally a few days before we first met during the Andy Burrows podcast. So that was, quite a serendipitous moment.
That's crazy. That's cool.
But yeah, so how has that been for you? Have you just enjoy life a lot more without it?
Yeah, it was a really necessary thing for me to do. It's 4 years and how many days? 4 years, a month and 3 days now.
Oh, wow.
Amazing. Congrats. Yeah.
Thank you. Sick. But yeah, it was bad. Like, it was really, really bad for various reasons. But it's the best thing I've ever done. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. I went through like a whole rehab but then also like when I came out of rehab in 2020, then the pandemic hit. It was like a lot of things happened at once. But ultimately I feel great. And that's not to say that everything is like perfect now, because that's also one thing that people think might happen if you say have a problem with something and then you stop doing it. That doesn't mean that it's not just the ultimate course correction. It just means you're skewing towards a better life for me anyways. That's been the case. Also it's been hard touring, you know, like it's, as we know, we all know here, it's part of the culture of what we do. And also, you play in bars, you play in places with bars, you play in pubs, etc. So, and just socially, especially in this country, there's a lot of booze in. So it's just meant I've had to be a bit more like disciplined in many ways. Like I limit my time in pubs or like in music venues as well. Like when there's the rider and stuff, I just spend as little time in venues as possible. Like I'll be there before the show whenever I need to be, blah, blah, blah. If I can get out between soundcheck and the gig, I will. And after the gig, I'm getting changed, having a shower, and I'm leaving immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah, and it's not even necessarily to be like, oh, I'm going to be... I feel under threat all the time. But it's like, are you more... Even if I'll be fine, am I more likely to do it if I'm there than not? It's like, of course I am.
Yeah.
Just from proximity. And also I've done a lot of partying. I know what happens after, like there's nothing new.
Yeah.
Like I'm not saying that you should, experience if you're young and starting up, have a good time. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But if something becomes a problem, you just need to cut it out, because ultimately I love what I do way more than all those things that come with it.
Yeah.
I'm one of the lucky ones who's been able to come out of it. I know lots of people who haven't. Mm-hmm. I know lots of people who are in the depths of it at the minute and can't I'm lucky. I've been really well supported by my family and my missus, and I've got a great crew of friends who have been quite supportive. And yeah, all the people I work with, they're very, very supportive as well. So, but yeah, no, it's tough, especially when people like not take the piss, but they're a bit like, oh, come on, have one.
Yeah, there is a lot of pressure, isn't there?
Mate.
But what we've noticed, so we interviewed a band called Picture This for the podcast last week, and they say no alcohol on the rider at all.
Yeah.
And it's not that they don't drink, but they're just aware that they're there to perform, and that's the priority.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes people start to mix the two up, don't they?
That's it.
Drinking is such a big part of it that they'll sabotage the gig for the partying sometimes.
For sure.
But I think same as the Tom Grennan tour, like Tom wasn't drinking, and I think it seems like there's starting to be more of a change towards a healthier non-drinking lifestyle in music.
I think in general, yeah, things are skewing towards that as well.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, the word rock and roll, like what that means. Like rock and roll, is turning up, not being able to sing, putting on a shit show, like that's kind of not really rock and roll anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
no.
I feel like they used to get away with it back in the day when, you know, there wasn't social media or whatever, but now like someone puts on a terrible gig and like it's all over Instagram, it's all over, you know.
Plus also like back then there was no other option. Like if you saw, it was still an event. If you went and saw Iggy Pop like being sick and like rolling around the stage, that was still, it was still more interesting than whatever you'd, whatever else was on.
Yeah.
Iggy Pop was only in town once every few years, like, and there was no other way of seeing them. But it's like, actually, we can consume media so much, it's actually a privilege. The fact that someone's actually taking the time to come and see you when they could just watch you on a screen or a live stream or watch people's footage from it, you know, it means a lot. And yeah, thankfully, there's a bigger fallout now if you're acting like a creep or if you're acting just pissed and like smashing things up, blah, blah, blah. Like, thankfully, bad word travels fast about you just as much as good word, you know, travels with you. But I literally have rock roll sleep repeat tattooed on my forearm.
Oh, okay.
From like when I was like I think I was 19 when I got that, maybe 20, which is funny. I think it's taken different meaning now.
Yes.
That's where I was at. It's a big old like sailor's tattoo.
Cool. So we love a travel day story in Floors. Is there a particular travel day or day off that comes to mind as the best ever?
There's some amazing ones. Mexico, we've had some really great shows there, and I remember when we were playing with Damon on Everyday Robots tour, we went on these boats that it's like a canal sort of river, but you're all on this boat, and as you travel up it, like mariachi bands like pass you and like can like more like latch onto your boat, and then they'll play you songs, like you get money, and then like they go, and then there's loads of different food, like little canals that pull up and like offer you stuff, and that was fun. But we also went to have you heard of Lucha Libre, like Mexican wrestling?
Oh, okay, yeah, with the masks.
Oh, yeah. We went front row to one of those, which so was cool. Sick.
Yeah.
Like everyone's got like a Rey Mysterio style mask, and these guys are like, they're short, but they're huge, like they're thick like these dudes, and they're jumping off these like the turnbuckle, and like they're moving so quickly, and they're hitting the ground so hard, like it's actually quite intense. But it was super fun because the atmosphere is amazing. We all got masks ourselves. I think at the gig we did, a few of us wore actually masks on stage, which was quite fun. I've got a bunch at home actually, which is like some treasured tour memories. But on the flip side of that, I remember doing a US tour with one of the projects I'm involved in called The Very Best. Big up to Johan and Esau and Jutty, where we all just got super sick because it was like, it was in a small van. One of us got really ill and like it just spread to everybody. So cut to us, we're all sharing like one hotel room as well. And like, I'm sort of sat on the loo.
Where was this, sorry?
This was in the States.
Okay.
And it's just like, someone sat on the loo, cutting loose. Someone's in the bathtub chundering, or like, and there's someone outside waiting to come in. Like someone's being sick in the sink. It was just like, everybody got whatever it was because it was such a small space. We still managed to finish the tour, but like, I think Johan got pink eye and had to wear an eye patch for half it. He looked like a literal pirate. And we were doing this tour, and then we'd go and play in a bar, and there's like 10 people, and it's like, oh Lord, what? This is so far from home, and this is so stressful to play to 10 people, but we had a great time. And people still talk about that tour to this day because we put on a great show and met some really fun people.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, yeah. We made some memories for sure.
That's funny. It reminded me of a time we were in LA once, and it was like a heat wave. Mm. And for whatever reason, thought it'd be a good idea to play tennis in like Burbank. So like,
right,
where it's like even hotter than, yeah. And I like burst a blood vessel in my eye. And like you mentioned, it wasn't like pink eye, but it was like, yeah, it was like demon eye.
Bloodshot.
Like,
it looked like an Instagram filter. Like, wow. Oh, yeah, it was so scary.
It was like sketchy as fuck. But we went to like the MTV Awards like that night. And I'm like going around just being like,
the Halloween themed.
Every person I say, I'm like, I'm really sorry about the eye. And everyone's like looking at me being like, who is this guy?
Sunglasses, man.
Yeah, I know. But there's a time that you can't really get away with sunglasses at like 1 a.m. at like
indoors,
an after party indoors.
No, it's a lot. You need to be a certain kind of artist to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I did rock up in sunglasses, but it's sunny today, so I can get away with it. But yeah, no, everything was okay. And there's one of those things as well. I was like, I don't know how long this is going to last. I was like, is this me for the next week?
Is this
me for like the next 24 hours? Is this going to go the whole run of the tour? Like, you know, or is this it? Just from, is this
eventually
me now?
You're just going to have to turn it into part of your character.
Yeah. It's part of my look, yeah.
They call me Red Eye now.
Okay, last question before we go to the quick fire. Over the years, what would you say is your best touring top tip? Like, what couldn't you live without on the road?
I feel like those are two questions. My top tip and what I couldn't live without.
Yeah, let's go for top tip first.
I'm going to split it into two. Top tip is definitely, and it's sort of highlighted by a very small thing. So, for example, if you're on a tour bus and people are asleep and you're staying up, maybe you're drinking or whatever, and you're coming in and out of where the bunks are, don't slam the door. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly insensitive. And I've had that before, and it just makes people feel angry. Like, especially me, I'm a light sleeper, you know.
Yeah.
Even with noise cancelling headphones, blah blah, it's like you just get more unreasonably sort of angry at stuff like that, because everyone's tired, everybody's missing home, like especially if you're a few weeks in or whatever. And that's just to say, like, do whatever you can do just to make everybody's life a bit easier. Like, turning up to soundcheck on time, being at lobby call on time, closing doors quietly, knocking on dressing room doors before you enter, not shouting down the mic to when you need something changed, like in your monitors, don't shout down the mic, you know, because everyone's got it in their ears.
Those sorts
of things, because they do add up, and eventually people have a picture of you that may not necessarily be true, but just because you've been careless with how everybody feels, because it's an unnatural way to be. You're on top of each other. You never spend that much time with anybody, even like your partner or whatever, in such a mad way. So like, just, you know, don't be a dick. And one thing I can't live without, ginger shots.
Okay.
These days, that's my like sort of daily gut health. But also, like, I used to smash like at least 2 shots of vodka before playing. And now I smash a ginger shot or two. It's sort of because it's that sort of like, right, we're about to do this.
Yeah.
It's like a sharpener, you know, just to clear the head, clear the palate. Let's go. That's become like my new.
Is it on the rider?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's deep on the rider.
It's a good shout, actually.
Yeah.
You should add those.
Mate, this is why we asked this question.
You're just collecting the ultimate
part of the podcast. This is literally for our personal archive.
Collecting the ultimate rider.
Recording, yeah.
Nowadays it's like having a hotel with a gym is like, it's quite, even if you don't necessarily use it, I think it's always good to have the option to get right physically.
Yeah, we made a rule that was like, hotels always come with breakfast, no matter what. That was the rule that we
facts.
Put in.
That's a big one.
Because sometimes...
Start the day right.
Yeah. Otherwise, you end up just spending all your PDs and it's like, what am I going to have for my lunch?
And also, yeah, exactly. Your lunch could be you don't know what it's going to be. Like, it could be really bad. And also the venue rider, you don't know what that cheese is saying. Yeah. You don't know what that ham is.
See,
like.
Well, we're like the least like diva-ish, like, you know, and we you know, we're frugal, you know,
right.
with everything. But there are certain things that we will, yeah. And one of those is
good cheese and good ham.
Cool. Well, this is the last part. This is the second section of the podcast. It's the quick fire round. So basically, it's the first thing that comes to mind. So if we were to say dogs, you would say cats.
Okay.
Or you can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know, it's the first thing that comes to your head, and you can just say the word, or you can elaborate on that.
Okay.
It's totally up to you. So we'll start off when we say Damon Albarn.
Gorillaz. And the biggest musical influence on my life.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolute legend. Yeah. A living legend.
Yeah. It's actually quite hard to put into words, actually, because it's done so much for me, not just professionally. Obviously, he's kept me well employed for a decade. But when I think of him, I think of someone who's loyal, number one, because like all his crew, all our crew and a lot of the people in the band, etc., have been there for 10 years plus. Especially the crew, it's like the same guys that work with Blur, and it's like I've been with him since the 90s.
The Forks, right?
Yeah, Forks, yeah. I'm wearing a Gorillaz like crew t-shirt, basically. It says Forks on the back. And that says a lot, I think, about him and how I think I would like to work going forward, and how I actually have kind of worked with my friends as well. It's like being loyal in this kind of game is quite important. But also I think his superpower, more than his obviously amazing writing, which is great, but I actually think he puts great people in a room together. Like, he attracts amazing people, but he makes sure cool people are in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
Including like I say, better than people or whatever. Like, everybody gets better by having this cool, diverse mixture of people in a room at the same time. And that's, I think, what he does best. He opens people up to new things because he's allergic to repeating himself.
Oh, really?
He cannot do it. Like, it literally physically doesn't work with him. Like, even if we played a song, we played the same song 100 times, every time we play it, there's something different about it. He's also not worried if it goes wrong. We've restarted songs like on big stages, like just like stop it, start again if it's really gone.
He would do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no,
really?
Straight up. If he makes a pure clanger, he's like, oh mate, let's re-up that. Sorry. And we've done it first song of the set before. Like, it's just like
walk off and then walk back on again.
No, it's just stayed on stage. It was quite awkward actually. But there's a openness to seeing what happens, as well as there being a high level of professionalism and a high level of work that goes into it, but also there's like an abandon and a let go of it, and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Awesome. Yeah,
it's not quite
amazing.
A quick fire. That's a very long
what
fire.
A legend.
Okay, when we say Murdoch,
flying
say.
V, and I've got a flying V bass that I use. It's a Eastwood Guitars flying V. I've actually got a tattoo of him on my arm here.
Oh wow!
Sick.
And his V. The V he's playing there is actually modeled on my V that I play. But I'm a bit like, for one album cycle, he wasn't in the band, and Ace from the Gangrene Gang in Puff Girls joined the band. And I think I kind of prefer Ace's vibe, just saying, controversial.
Kind of continuing on from this conversation, when we say Jamie Hewlett.
Oh, sweet, the sweetest, 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 sweetest dude. And also prolific. Like, a lot of people don't understand just how, when I say everything to do with the visuals, etc., comes out of his head.
Yeah.
But these are worlds he's built for 20 years.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
on
yeah.
top of that, the art he does outside of it, the art he just sketches, like, he's as good an artist as Damon is a songwriter. And it's like, some people just think he's just Gorillaz and Tank Girl, and he's not. He's a whole visual artist and yeah. a director, and he thinks about color, he thinks about sound, he thinks about texture. He's also extremely silly, which is like, again, something that Damon is as well. And I think most people in the band have a silly streak, but is also just as serious about what they do. is a really cool balance, I think, with that, with them, but also I think with the people that they attract.
So, and does he come out on the road at all? Does
sometimes, because he's often he's busy making videos.
Yeah.
Because they work quite. Damien works quite quickly, so he might have a song and then want to get it. They might get it out within 2 months, and he has to animate a whole video, and they have to start working on the lore and the merch and all this stuff. So, he does join us sometimes.
It's so cool how much the visual side of things is prioritized.
For sure.
It's so rare, isn't it, these days?
Yeah.
I feel like music videos are often an afterthought or not even essential for a lot of young bands nowadays. So
yeah.
It's great to see, yeah.
No, it's cool. It's a great show to come and see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, when we say Andy Burrows, you say?
I think it's called the Stag Pub in Hampstead, where we used to drink a whole bunch. We both had our own pint glasses and we take it there.
Really?
Yeah. It was quite fun. We used to have the same manager, big up to Will Gresford, Triptych Management. And that's how we initially met. And we'd write songs together. We sort of initially met. This is like over 10 years ago. We'd write songs. He's an amazing songwriter. He's a really sweet dude. He's a beast of a drummer. Hits really hard. I just remember him. He's a walking hug, and I love him dearly. Yeah,
sick. And then final question: when we say Shea Adelican, what do you say? It's getting deep.
It's true. I say, oh man, new music coming soon. Number one, I've been working on new music. The first record I think I've probably made in 12 years or something like that. It'll be my first release. I don't know. There's a lot going on. But I'd say I'm Nigerian. I'm English. I'm a musician. I love cooking. I love my missus. I'm lucky to be here. I'm grateful to you guys for inviting me on here. I'm grateful to have the job that I'm doing. It's mad that we get to do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should all never forget that, because there's lots of people listening who would kill to do that. So
yeah.
I think gratitude, I guess, is what I'd say.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, and we'll see you at a hotel
thanks,
bar.
Man. Nice one. No, I appreciate
somewhere
you
in the
guys.
Future.
Yeah, cheers, man. Appreciate
nice
it.
Nice one.
You too.
Thanks, dude.
Thank
nice.
You.
A huge thanks to Shea for being part of the podcast, and to the Hilton Hotel Bar in Islington for having us again. Listening back to the conversation, I'm gutted I wasn't there, but the boys held the fort wonderfully.
Oh, thanks. We couldn't do this podcast without you guys listening, including you, Huss. So a huge thanks to you for being part of the Floors family. If you do like what you hear, then let us know. There is nothing better than getting a little DM or message saying how much you enjoyed a certain story, or how our sultry tones help bring to life an otherwise long and boring morning commute for you.
Make sure you like, comment, and subscribe anywhere and everywhere you can. It's all about the algorithm. You can find us most places at Meet at the Hotel Bar or meetatthehotelbar.com. It really does make so much difference for us as an independent podcast in trying to climb those big, bad podcast charts.
Join us next time, where we'll be chatting to Irish pop sensations Picture This. You can expect stories of how they went to number one in 15 minutes after an unplanned radio performance, on-stage injuries, setting records at the 3 Arena, and how it feels to have 70,000 people singing an unreleased song back at you. Only on...